Welcome to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Covers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And joining me to help you get ready for NFL Week 2 action is Twin Spires analyst Scott Shapiro. You can follow him on Twitter at ScottShap34. Scott, great to have you back on the show.
Yeah, buddy. Congratulations on the move, and just super excited for the NFL season to be back. Got off to a highly entertaining start. Lots of upsets, lots of exciting games, especially on primetime. Looking forward to week two.
Yeah, and I am really looking forward to this because here's what we're going to do for today's show. One, we're going to recap week one in a way where we say, hey, what are our lessons learned? What are our nuggets? We're not going through all the games, more the high-level stuff. Then we're going to look at week two. What are the opportunities? We're going to play the games and have some fun. So if you listened to week one, congratulations, because hopefully it was profitable for you because we went 3-0 with our picks.
Maybe that was money.
And with that, I'll quickly recap them. Number one, pick a loser, was the Jags. This was a principal bet for us. Piece of cake. Why? Jaguars, a one-win team, laying a field goal on the road with a rookie head coach and a rookie quarterback. They could have been playing Alabama for all that I care. I was going to be taking the other side. And I felt so much joy when NFL week one started and the team that performed the best right out of the gate was the Houston Texans. It didn't matter what else happened the rest of the week. I'm sitting there and I'm dancing. I'm like, boom, look at my Houston Texans. So super proud and excited for that. Our get comfortable being uncomfortable bet of the week was the Miami Dolphins. And why did we do that? Because we gave the stat about the division matchups with a team getting points and the Dolphins were getting a field goal. It was a close game, but did work in our favor. And last but certainly not least, the big Mick Moneyline parlay of the week. That hit. Got a little bit hairy with the Bucks on Thursday night and the Chiefs against the Browns, but then the Rams brought it home for us to give us a 3-0 week. Love starting that way. Scott, how did week one treat you?
Not as good as you. Mixed bag, Rob. I had the over in the Cardinals-Titans game, which looked like a layup. 51 points with 18 minutes to play. Somehow, I guess they just went to sleep in that. Matt Prater missed a field goal, and from there, you just had a bad feeling.
I was with you on that one. Nauseating. 3 minutes left in the third, 51 points scored. All we need is any points and nothing.
Absolutely Proceed. Brutal. You handicap a game, and then you get that big lead, and you assume there'll be some lack of defense. No, they just went to sleep. Tennessee packed it in. That was disappointing. I did have the under in the game where you had the Dolphins. That was pretty much of a lock. The fumble late by Damian Harris did not hurt our chances, and it helped you as well. But mixed bag. We're hoping to do a little better in week two, but not so bad to start the year.
And on my end, I would like to let everyone know, or actually say thank you, because apparently I give my good picks on this podcast, because despite going 3-0 on the podcast, I went 5-6 on the week. Why? Because like everybody else, it says NFL week one and Tuesday gets here and I'm like, boom, let's light up this board. So another one like you where I got backdoor covered was on the Carolina Panthers team total over 24. I believe they had 16 points at the half. And I'm like, all right, we're sitting here pretty. We need just a little bit more of a score. And then nothing. I think they finished with 19 points. Another one, which was rough, which is actually one of my lessons. So, Scott, one of the things that we say oftentimes is get the best of the number. You hear this everywhere in sports betting, get the best of the number. And certainly with the legalization of sports betting across a lot of the United States, many of us have the ability to have multiple sports books so we can shop the lines. Well, I was on the Detroit Lions +7.5 because I liked that hook. And I guess I didn't see that line going up to, in some places, as high as 10. And I made that bet on Tuesday. And lo and behold, that game finished at 8. And unlike that Texans game, I was about ready to throw up immediately upon seeing that Lions game because the 49ers had 31 points at the half. And I'm like, this is toast. And when I lost by the hook, it just reminded me once again to let everybody know, get the best of the number. And Scott, I'm curious to hear from you about this. When looking at lines, so was I incorrect in my process of, hey, the Lions are getting the 7.5 were it more than a touchdown? Or oftentimes, and certainly this week, we'll look at when we see a 2.5 or a 3.5, depending on which side we're on, being like, boom, I want to lock myself in at this number without realizing, whoa, that might go up to 4 or it might go down to 1. What is your process for how or when you put in your bets?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is a feel thing, Rob, but a macro rule would be with an underdog, especially an unsexy team like the Lions, waiting is oftentimes the right move. The odds of that going to 7 as opposed to going to 8, 8.5, 9, which are kind of dead numbers, although we found out that they weren't so dead, especially 8. That's probably one rule. If you would have liked the Niners, maybe jumping in at 7.5. Same could be said for any game. Maybe a game where there's a 3.5-point favorite, road favorite, real heavy, sexy team playing a less sexy team on the road. Probably getting in as the favorite would be advisable. We're waiting. Doesn't always work, but I think more times than not it will. And some of it's just a feel thing, kind of getting a feel for what the public is going to do and also what the sharps are going to do. It's not all about the public, but tough to have a steadfast rule. But generally speaking, I think if you lean with the favorites, jumping in at the lower, jumping in early, underdogs maybe waiting it out, it would be a good thing.
All right, but we will get to this game. Eagles are getting 3.5 this week, taking on the 49ers. All right, they're at home. Does it change your mindset at all for a home dog as opposed to a road underdog?
A little bit, because usually if a home dog, especially at a number like 3.5, most people think the road favorite is significantly better. A 3.5-point, 3.5-point road dog, those teams are almost equal, so the public perception is going to be different. So, yes, I would be more willing to jump in early on a road favorite at the 3, 3.5 number than I would be a road dog, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. So one last thing from NFL Week 1, when Ellie and I were talking, we decided to sort of put our crystal ball on Miss Cleo style and say, all right, if some teams were to win this week, how would it change our narrative? And there is two teams that we brought up, one being the Pittsburgh Steelers. Hey, if the Steelers were to beat the Bills, how would this change the narrative on them? And me being a Steelers fan, what I took from that game is, one, the Steelers have an elite defense. I already knew they had an elite defense, but the media narrative that was out there was so much pushing anti-Pittsburgh. And what everyone was sort of harping on is the defense isn't going to be as good because they lost Bud Dupree, except for the fact that Alex Highsmith was not a first-round pick, but highly drafted, as well as signing Melvin Ingram. And that combination with TJ Watt has really allowed them to have a powerful force on the edges. And then number two, they're getting Devin Bush back. So I was extremely confident in the Steelers from a defensive side of things. So my mindset on Pittsburgh was, listen, the offense with Ben Roethlisberger and the offensive line, it can be whatever it is, but defensively, the Steelers are going to be in games, and that's exactly the narrative that we saw. Pittsburgh didn't look sexy in the first half at all, and actually they looked very stagnant, but the defense kept them in the game, and they kept them in the game, and boom, in the blink of an eye, two touchdowns happened, and they took the lead, and now they've got this suffocating defense. I did, however, have one bit of reservation as it related to Ben Roethlisberger. He looked extremely brittle. He looked like the old quarterback that everyone said he was going to be. And usually, Ben, he's a little bit spry or frisky, sort of like the Fitzpatrick where you're like, wow, look at him just sort of shaking and baking. He did not look like that. So the good Steelers defense, my hesitation, Ben looked shaky, and that offensive line was rough. Any thoughts for you on what you saw from Pittsburgh?
Well, I think you said a lot of really sharp things about the defense, in that there was a lot of talk of people thinking the loss of a few key players was going to lead from them being an elite defense to a mediocre defense, not taking into account the acquisitions that were made, getting Devin Bush back. And what I think is most important of all with the Steelers defense is their scheme. What a great game plan that was that they came up with. Normally, Blitzburg became a team that never, that hardly blitzed at all. In fact, got pressure with that front four. They had Josh Allen thinking, overthinking, unlike he did last year. So I thought that was extremely impressive. And you mentioned it as well. The offense is kind of what we expected. Maybe we were hoping for a little more pre-snap motion like we saw in the preseason. And we might have been hoping that maybe Ben was a little bit better than he looked at the end of the year. None of those really happened. The offensive line didn't open holes. I think you made a real good point overall, though, with the Steelers. They're the kind of team that I would be very willing to take points with, especially close to six or more against just about any team in the NFL. The question is, are you willing to lay those kind of points, knowing exactly what we just said about the offense and the defense?
Yes, and you'd hope that the offense would get better as they get more continuity, certainly on the offensive line. And the second team that we looked at, and it was not a vote of support, but it was more an identification of something, was the Philadelphia Eagles, because they were another team where the preseason narrative on them was the Eagles are going to be last place or fighting for the Giants for the bottom of that division. And holy smokes, Batman, they straight crushed the Falcons. And what made me think about this is, Scott, when you and I did the podcast together for so many episodes, we would see the Falcons as this shiny object. And you see Julio Jones and Matt Ryan and every reason why you should want to bet the Falcons. But we knew when you bet the Falcons, things happen in the wrong way. And all of a sudden, boom, the Eagles boat race them. And I feel like the Eagles may have changed the perception on themselves more than any team this week.
Yeah, I think the Eagles proved more than anything that they have, when healthy, great offensive line and a great defensive line. And that can dominate games, not just win them. And that's how they beat the Falcons. Sure, Jalen Hurts looked good. Devonta Smith with the early touchdown, the first round pick. The Falcons played in their hands by running the ball probably too much. But in the end, they won the game in the trenches. And the Eagles had a lot of injuries on the offensive line, particularly over the last few years. When they're healthy, they're a strong bunch. And that defensive line absolutely dominated the Falcons. So if they continue to dominate in the trenches, they'll be a legit contender in the NFC East, which probably won't have a team that wins more than 9 or maybe 10 games at the most.
All right, so let's look forward to week 2, and week 2 is overreaction week. What we saw in week 1, was that who the team was, or was it, as Aaron Rodgers would say, just one game? So to help you out, what I always like to say is we want to teach you how to fish. So what I want to do is list the overreaction candidates, good and bad, so that we have sort of a menu of teams that you can identify and say, all right, when I'm making my bets this weekend, what do I think about each of them? So let's start with the good. We've got the Cardinals, who smoked the Titans 38-13. For me, they very much have shiny object syndrome. Be careful with them because you can fall in love with the narrative of Kyler Murray. And Scott, I'll get your thoughts on each of the good and the bad after I go through these. Number 2, the Saints. They smoked the Packers 38-3 in a displaced environment. Everyone thought, wait a second, what's going to happen for the Saints with everything in disorder? They were the opposite of that. Number 3, the Raiders. They beat the Ravens in prime time, in overtime, as 4-point dogs. The Raiders always have shiny object syndrome because of John Gruden and the media narrative that is attached to the now Las Vegas Raiders. And the last ones, the Texans. They smoked the Jags 37-21. Are they not the worst team in football? So, Scott, starting with those good teams, do you have any thoughts on overreaction one way or another on any of those 4?
Well, the Cardinals, I think you have to be careful. It's very doubtful that a guy like Chandler Jones is going to get the turnstile of Tyler Lewan to lead the 5 sacks again. I do think they have an improved defense based on the defensive front, but their secondary, which wasn't tested by the Titans, has a lot of holes in it. I'm not overly excited still about what I saw from Cliff Kingsbury, who was supposed to be an offensive sharp guy coming into the league, hasn't been. I'm neutral on the Cardinals. I wouldn't get overly excited. They're probably a borderline playoff team. The Raiders, I think, ran into a Ravens team that was banged up, made a lot of mistakes. drop, and the Raiders drop back to pass a lot in that game. If they continue to do so, I don't know if that'll be a winning recipe with Derek Carr, but the Ravens failed to get any sort of pressure on him, which was a little bit surprising. I think the Raiders are still an under 500 team, and the Texans, I think they just ran into a Jaguars team that might be the only team in the league that is worse than them with a head coach that does not have this team ready to play. So I'm still very much fading the Texans. Reminds me a little, Rob, of the Jaguars of last year that beat the Colts opening week. They were supposedly a team that was the worst in the league. Everybody started to question themselves. Remind me, how many games did they win after opening week?
Zero. So the reason we identified this is because it's very easy to be like, this team is going to keep crushing. And so often we talk about get comfortable being uncomfortable, that being the potential opportunity for you to fade one of those teams. On the flip side, here's where you really need to get comfortable being uncomfortable. The teams that looked the worst, the Falcons, as we talked about, lost 32-6 to the Eagles at home. Could not have been a worse performance to start the season. The Titans crushed 38-13. Offensive line gives up 5 sacks to Chandler Jones. Packers smoked 38-13 by the Saints. And then an honorable mention to the Vikings, who lose to the Bengals in the very, it was very on brand for the Vikings because it was very Kirk Cousins-esque. That I have a principle where I try not to bet on AFC North teams as a Steelers fan because I want to see the Bengals lose and the Ravens lose and the Browns lose. And it doesn't mean I won't bet on those teams for this podcast, but I try not to. Same thing with betting on or for picking fantasy players. But looking at that, you're like, this just looks so simple. Of course the Vikings are going to beat the Bengals. Joe Burrow's coming back from injury. Vikings, Kirk Cousins, Dalvin Cook. Justin Jefferson, there's every reason why. And then all of a sudden you start watching the game and you're like, ruh-roh, here comes the Kirk Cousins Vikings again.
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings to me are probably a below 500 team. They're in a real poor division. I probably think that they're mediocre. Maybe they play the Cardinals this week, probably right below them if I'm tearing up the NFC. The one team that I'm most worried about that you mentioned, well, the Falcons to me are a bottom three or four team, period. The Titans are the team I'm most worried about, and I think what we saw might be more of what we're getting. I know they've got Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and Ryan Tannehill, but that defense was trash last year. I don't expect them to be much better. And if they don't block for these guys in early and keep them in games, it takes away their ability to run play action, which is what Ryan Tannehill has benefited based on Derrick Henry's ability to run the ball for a long time. I'm worried about the Titans. The team I'm least worried about that you mentioned, Rob, is the Packers. Sure, they might not be as good as they were last year, especially on offense. We'll see if the offseason turmoil with Aaron Rodgers and the Davante Adams contract situation comes into play. But I expect them to play much better. They sleepwalked out of the gate in a weird game in Jacksonville versus the Saints. Look for them to bounce back in a big way on Monday night against the Lions.
Yeah, the one thing about the Titans for us to monitor is Derrick Henry's usage has been so much the last few years that we know that historically running backs who are getting the volume of carries that he was, typically there's a regression that ends up happening. So if we start to see the narrative of what's wrong with Derrick Henry, just put that in the back of your brain that every week go into the box score for the Titans and see how many carries or touches and yardage Derrick Henry had, because that, without Derrick Henry being the 2,000-yard rusher, this may be a little bit different of a team. So the next thing that I want to get to right here is some opportunities. And this week presents a good amount of home dog opportunities for us to potentially choose from. Because one of the things that I'm excited about with this NFL season, and I certainly saw that in week one, definitely with my betting habits, is I love to get points, certainly with home teams, even more so in a divisional matchup. So with this list that I'm about to share, once again, use this as a menu to say, all right, this is a little almost like if a restaurant has a special. For me, this would be the sort of special that you want to consider being like, do I want a piece of this? So here's the 6 games. 1, Panthers getting 3.5 at home, taking on the Saints. This is also a division matchup. Dolphins at home getting 3.5 versus the Bills, also a division matchup. Jets getting 6 versus the Patriots, also a division matchup. We've got the Colts getting 4 versus the Rams at home. We got the Jags at home getting 6 versus the Broncos, and the Ravens getting 3.5 at home versus the Chiefs. Scott, do you have any thoughts on any of those home dogs and or home division dogs?
Well, I'll save my one for getting uncomfy in a little bit. That probably is the one I'm most interested in of all of them. But I also think the Dolphins-Bills is interesting because, well, the Dolphins played pretty well to win a game. That was an ugly one against the Patriots. But more so, what's the perception of the Bills now after that game? We came into the season. All anybody can really remember is the Bills going up and down the field, especially blowing out teams in the regular season to end the year. Now we've got this vision of the Steelers shutting them down. Josh Allen, not as accurate, maybe regressing like you spoke with about Derrick Henry. Josh Allen's a huge leap forward last year. A lot of people talking about whether he'll regress or not. That one is usually the home dog is the team that I feel is a more uncomfy situation, but I see a lot of people flocking to the Dolphins in this one after the week one results, and I'm wondering if those people thought the same way before week one. So that's the tricky one. All of the other ones I think are live dogs, but I'd be a little careful with the Dolphins.
And I think a lot of those are very uncomfortable. No one feels all warm and fuzzy taking Zach Wilson against the Patriots, or the Colts are a team I was unfortunately on last week. It was pretty much a loss right out of the gate. No one feels good for them, certainly against a Rams team. And when you feel this, no one feels good, that should be a little alert for you of, wait a second, I should think twice about this. For your point on the Bills, the one thing that I would say is I believe in the culture of the Bills. I really like Sean McDermott as a head coach. I like the way that they've built this team and this program. So while I agree with everything that you're saying there, I am more apt to believe in that organization as a whole because they've been proving this and building this for years.
No, that's a very good point and a good reason to steer clear of it. It is interesting, though. The last two times we've seen the Bills play, they have not. I thought McDermott and Dable, maybe Brian Dable, the offensive coordinator, elite coaches. But that AFC championship game against the Chiefs, they were very conservative, not like they were before. And they got totally outcoached by the Steelers in week one. So hopefully they bounce back because they've been a fun team to watch grow and a fun team to watch on the field.
All right, so let's have some fun and give some picks, and let's do our Big Mick Moneyline Parlay of the Week.
I see they got the Big Mac. I got the Big Mick.
And the goal of the Big Mick is to put together a Moneyline Parlay that gets us to minus 110 or better. And Scott, I've got a three-teamer that pays minus 104. Give me the Browns, the Packers, and the Steelers. So looking at the Browns, boom, that's the fade on the Texans. Packers, they're taking on the Lions. Those are the two double-digit favorites, which were no-brainers. So when I tried to identify my third bet right here, I didn't want to throw in the Bucks versus Falcons for it being a division matchup right there. So even though it's a big spread, I just threw it out. So now I'm looking to find one team that is preferably at home that I believe is going to win. And there weren't a lot of options because you're sitting there looking at Chargers versus Cowboys, no thanks. Seahawks, Titans, despite the fact of what we said about the Titans, could they win? Sure. So for me, I'm going with the Steelers because one, I love what I saw out of their defense. Two, they're at home. Three, Raiders on a short week coming off a big win on Monday Night Football. So give me the Browns, Packers, Steelers, three-team Moneyline Parlay. Pays out minus 104. What about you?
Well, it's interesting. We did not talk about this beforehand. And I have a four-team parlay that's going to pay about 170, I believe, when I checked it last night. But it has the three teams that you have. I think the Browns playing the Texans. I think this could be a blowout, regardless of whether it's a blowout or not. It's hard to see the Browns losing as over 6-1 favorites. Same with the Packers. Talked about them bouncing back in a big way on Monday night after absolutely not showing up in week one. The Steelers, you made all the real good points. The Raiders, off the big win, they had to go to overtime, short rest, traveling cross country. Not real excited, as we talked about, laying points with the Steelers, especially more than 3 or 4. But I think they find a way to win this one, even if they let up a little bit off the big road win in Buffalo. I'm going to add a fourth one in there, though. I'm going to take the Broncos minus 275 to beef this up a little bit. You've got Urban Meyer seemingly maybe wanting out before the second week of the season. That team seems like a wreck. You thought maybe they were building something, bringing in Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne obviously going down, but it seems like it's a train wreck. I don't know if they're going to play hard for Urban Meyer, and I think the Broncos are a team that might play a lot of close games, but I think they might win more games than people might think. So we'll go with a 4-team Big Mick: Broncos, Packers, Steelers, and Browns.
And certainly you've got to have confidence that Teddy Bridgewater, who is very good at covering. So what we're going to do next is play a game that we call Pick a Loser.
Oh, what a loser!
And the goal of this segment is to think different, and it's actually the opposite. Everyone says we want to identify winners. In this segment, we are going to identify a losing bet. And for me, I'm actually going to go with the San Francisco 49ers laying 3.5 on the road, taking on the Eagles. And I've got four reasons for this. Number one, could the 49ers lose this game straight up? Yes. So I feel comfortable being on the Eagles as a team that could win at home. Number two, they're giving more than a field goal on the road. So the 49ers can still win by a field goal, and boom, I'm a winner. Number three, not 100% sure what's up with the 49ers defense, who just gave up a crap ton of points to the Lions. And number four, as you mentioned, Scott, strong offensive and defensive lines for the Eagles. And we know you win in the trenches. So for those four reasons, the 49ers -3.5 is my pick a loser of the week. What about you?
I'm going to roll with the Dallas Cowboys, and I'm going to do it for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, I think the Cowboys with Dak back are a better team, obviously, than we saw most of last year. But I still think they're the same team, Rob. Sure, they're going to score plenty of points. But remember, their defense was historically bad in 2020, and I don't think they're going to be that much better this year. Antonio Brown, Rob Gronkowski, Chris Godwin were all running free in the secondary most of that game on Thursday night to start the year. The Cowboys defense is going to struggle to deal with the Chargers, and the Chargers look very good if you consider that they were on the road in their season opener facing a very good defense, considered one of the best in the league in the Washington football team. And that revamped offensive line protecting Justin Herbert did an excellent job of giving Herbert opportunities all game long. He only got hit a couple of times compared to what you would have expected. And Herbert throws the ball downfield regularly. He's not dinking and dunking. In fact, he didn't even throw the ball to Austin Eckler out of the backfield, which is probably a good idea, but this guy is aggressive. And I think he's going to pick apart the Cowboys defense. I think the perception right now because of that Thursday night game is that the Cowboys are a much improved team from last year, and they will win more games and be better on offense with Dak, but I still think they have major issues. I'll roll with the Chargers -3. Cowboys, my loser.
I would also put Dallas in the shiny object syndrome team bucket, where when I think about shiny object teams, you can fall in love with one thing. You can fall in love with Kyler Murray. You can fall in love with the entire Dallas offense. Or in the terms of the old school Falcons, you can fall in love with Julio Jones and Roddy White or Calvin Ridley or insert whatever it is. And you have to be careful about that shiny object because it catches your eye. And I like sort of how you broke all of that down. I'm staying away from that game because I feel uncomfortable in terms of I can see either side, albeit I like your logic. So last segment that we've got here, and this is one of my favorites. It is called Get Comfortable Being Uncomfortable.
Onions!
And the goal of this is to get uncomfortable because it takes a lot of onions, as Raph would say, for you to pick a bet that does not make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside. Because if it was such as simple as always taking the Packers and the Chiefs, two teams that neither covered last week, we would all be millionaires. But however, there is huge casinos in Vegas, so we're going to look at some bets that make us uncomfortable. And Scott, for me, I feel really gross out of this, and I'm going to give this an 80 out of 100 on the uncomfortable scale. And I'm going to take the Chicago Bears laying 2 at home, taking on the Bengals, and the line started at 4, and I've seen some 3s and a 2.5, and I saw a 2 before this podcast, and with this line continuing to go down, I'm actually going to look and see if it continues to go down even more, but I'll lock myself in at the Bears -2, and this is strictly a principal bet, because the Bengals are coming off a big win, and I'm getting a home team at less than a field goal. And they are also coming off a double-digit loss. Do you know anyone who's sitting there saying, you know what I can't wait to do? Run to the window and bet the Bears. Boy, did that game against the Rams make me feel all good. No, I feel terrible with Andy Dalton in his revenge game versus the Bengals going there. But I'm going to go from a value standpoint and say, you know what? The Bengals are on the road. They're riding high. Perception of these two teams, completely different. And remember, I believe the Bears were a playoff team last year, right?
Yep.
And the Bengals, one of the bottom teams. So there is still some regression to the mean for both of them. I think while the Bengals are a team that could ascend, I'm going to take the value on a home team at less than the field goal. Uncomfortably, give me the Bears -2. What about you, Scott?
The Andy Dalton revenge angle. Oh, yeah. What's more comfortable than that, Rob? Maybe not as comfortable, because this team did win in opening week, but it's more about playing against a team that looked was in your sexy teams to start the year, and that's the Saints. The Saints looked unbeatable against the Packers. They dominated that game on both sides of the ball, never letting Aaron Rodgers and crew get it going on offense, making that defense look pedestrian. But there's a couple things at play here. First off, before week one, playing the Panthers at Carolina, this was a 3-point line. After the two teams played in week one, we're getting an extra hook right now. So that's obviously advantageous, like you've talked about in a couple spots already on the podcast. 3.5. Then you talk about a Saints team. Everything went right in terms of game script. And this is a team that's not playing at home. They've got all the turmoil from the hurricane. They played in Jacksonville. Now they're going on the road to Carolina. Not ideal for being comfortable themselves. And then you have a Carolina team that was kind of ho-hum, beating a Jets team that not many people expect a lot from. It was kind of ugly. Didn't score a lot of points. People still questioning Sam Darnold. I think this defense is underrated. So playing against the Saints is not comfortable after that dominating performance in week one against the Packers. But I think it's a good spot for the Panthers, +3.5. I don't feel real comfy about it, Rob, but hopefully it's a winning ticket.
And that's a game I also identified. And the thing that I like about the Panthers is similar to what I said about the Bills. I really like what Matt Rhule did in his first year in building the culture. They exceeded expectations. And exceeding expectations, hopefully that means that they can win or lose by less than a field goal, so that we all some cash some tickets. Scott, really enjoyed jamming with you. Where can everybody connect with you?
Yeah, the best place to find my stuff, Rob, would be on Twitter, @ScottChapp34. Also, my work is up on Twin Spires. And it was great, as always, to get back at it with you and talk the NFL. So glad this season's back. So glad things are going well for you, my friend. Easy for me to say.
Thank you very much. And I want to hear from you. What is on your NFL Week 2 card? Do you have a Big Mick, Moneyline Parlay, a Pick a Loser, or a Get Comfortable Being Uncomfortable Bet of the Week? Also, thoughts on home dogs or home division dogs, or do you have any shiny object teams? You can hit me up on Twitter or Instagram @RobCressy. Also, make sure to tag @Covers. And remember, if you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money management. The devil hit you with the rap level of 10. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump, put your rope. If you like the way the sound pump, pump it in your back top. And let loose with the juice when I do rock. I'm too hot. Some say I got more juice than Tupac.